Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's very own personal finance podcast, where we talk about all things money, savings, investments and spending. I'm Kaizad Adajania. COVID-19 lockdown has been hard on all of us, but it has also excited a large section of investors who have suddenly found love for stock trading. These are the millennials, the very young investor who want to try out investing and who are dabbling in stock markets for the first time in their lives. This is also called the Robin Hood phenomena, named after the US-based stock trading app called Robinhood, which actually denotes the democratizing finance for all in the words of its official Twitter account, as the app aims to give access to stock markets to those who do not have it. But in June, a 20-year-old customer of Robinhood took his life because he had thought he had made losses of $730,000. What's worse, he had misunderstood what the app was telling him. This has suddenly highlighted the dangers of trading in stocks by those who do not understand stock markets and trading. And closer home, where online brokerages have added record number of clients. Do these millennials know what they're getting into? I have with me Shyam Shekhar, chief ideator of iThought, a Chennai-based wealth management firm. Shyam is a veteran stock markets investor and is known for his grounded investment policies. Hi Shyam, welcome to the show.
Happy to be with you on the show.
So let me start by asking the first question, Shyam. You've been in the markets for a long time. You've tracked markets very closely. You know very well that now a lot of things, online brokerages in the past decade or so have cropped up. But more so, let's take a look at what some of them have managed to rake up a number of new accounts in the last 1 year alone. Like Zerodha Broking has added about 5.26 lakh accounts in the last 1 year alone. Angel Broking has added close to 2 lakh accounts. 5paisa Capital has added close to 1.3 lakh accounts in the past 1 year alone. Now, those are some real big numbers of investors coming in. We're given to understand that most of these investors are very young investors. They are coming in this lockdown. They have lots of time on their hands to invest, to trade, So according to you, Shyam, why are so many people coming into the stock markets all of a sudden? I mean, is it just the lockdown, or is it the sudden U-turn of the markets that's taken them by surprise, or is it because of falling returns in the traditional fixed income instruments? And what's your take about this whole new retail trading phenomena?
I think the democratization of markets is a very welcome thing. When I began as a young investor, it was very difficult to open an account with a broker. The broker wouldn't take you on as a client unless you have a lot of money.
Okay.
So there were entry barriers even to opening an account. So from that point in the 90s to where we are today, I think we have come a full circle. So democratization of the markets is a welcome thing. Everybody should have an equal opportunity to participate. In that sense, people entering the markets is something which we should always welcome.
Okay.
But what they do once they get in is something which needs a closer look. And how they spend their time in the markets is something that requires, in my sense, I think that what we are seeing today is a very, very interesting phenomenon. We are seeing most people coming into the markets with the idea of trading.
Okay.
And they also want to have the thrill of investing.
And they see it an exciting opportunity.
And they would also like to do this because they have time. And these three things, thrill, trading and time, I call them the, they are like TNT, very explosive combination.
Yeah.
These three things combined like TNT. So that is something which they have not factored in. As luck would have it, I would think most of these accounts were opened in a rising market where everybody would have made some money from beginner's luck. And now they would possibly be expanding what they are doing. So as the thrill rises, the trading will rise and the time they have at their disposal will come down now that the lockdown lifts. So people are actually setting themselves up for shocks whenever the market turns. So till now it has been a one-way rally from the time accounts have been opened. So it has been the typical honeymoon period where you have beginner's luck in your favor. And the combination of these three things can be quite disastrous. I have never seen investors of all age groups succeed sustainably when they deploy these three things. They combine very badly and explosively.
Okay.
So that is something that I sense in this. But people are coming into this also because of three things again. One is that they feel that equity funds have underperformed. That is one thing. And the second thing is that they feel that the returns from debt investments are ordinary or even worse than that. And the third thing is they do not see superior investing skills at the hand of the organized industry, which is, I mean, we can debate it, but that's how they perceive. So they think that why should I have somebody else? I can do it on my own.
So they feel they can outperform the mutual fund managers also.
That is their sense.
Okay. And most of these are new investors. Most of these you are saying who have opened accounts, they may be opening a first time account at, let's say, an Angel Broking or a Zerodha, but they are overall, they are new investors in the stock markets. Many of them, at least many of the young customers, because the average age also of opening the accounts, I'm told, have gone down from the early 30s to the late 20s. So they really don't have any experience.
They are new investors to direct equity. They may not be new investors to stock market. That is how they derive their confidence from, because they feel I have done mutual fund. Therefore, this should also be something that's up my alley. So I could manage this well. So there is a certain confidence from that comes to them.
Okay.
About the age, there could be even older investors, even the others who are even currently using other advised forms of investing, want to try it on their own. They want to do something on their own. That I told you, the three T's are definitely working.
Okay.
So there are a lot of people who have accounts with people like us who also want to open an account and try it on their own.
Do you think some of these investors would be direct investors in mutual funds before? And as you said that now they might have got some confidence that they would have made some money in mutual funds and they would have tried their hand out in direct equities. That shift from direct mutual funds to direct share broking. Do you see that shift also happening these days?
Yes, that is also happening.
Okay.
That is also happening. Basically, they think that the mutual fund manager does not have the scope to be as nimble as themselves. So, the ability to be nimble because you're an individual is today seen as a virtue.
Okay.
And a positive virtue.
Hmm.
But we don't know how it will play out when the environment, you know, turns adverse.
Yeah.
So at the moment, they see it as a positive virtue. They think the fund manager cannot get out or get in easily, but I can do it by a click of a button. In that sense, the online ecosystem has raised the investment confidence above what the skills warrant.
Okay.
Because the overall belief is that transactional ease is all that matters.
Transactional ease. Okay. And speaking of transactional ease, I mean, a lot of online brokerages seem to be offering many schemes to lure new investors. Sham, what do you feel, is it in the right spirit for brokerages to offer these kind of incentives? Like, you know, you cut this cost, we'll cut that cost, this is free, that is free. I mean, I remember many magazine subscriptions once upon a time used to, you know, come up with, various offers like a kettle or a suitcase with a 1 year subscription, 2 year subscription. That itself also was frowned upon at one point in time. But when brokerages give these kind of schemes to lure in customers and to trade with their money, do you think it airs on the wrong side of doing business, or you feel everything is okay in this kind of market?
I believe that call should be a regulatory call, because if I give an investor who comes and starts an SIP something, as if, suppose I'm a distributor and I give some money to an investor who comes to me, it's essentially out of the income he's going to give me, right?
Yeah.
Technically, we call it passback. Regulatorily, that is not something that is acceptable.
Yes, correct.
In other parts of the same ecosystem. So I would think that parity should be there in this also. And somehow the regulators will definitely take notice of this, and they will, make better sense prevail upon the system. But at the moment, I believe that it is within the rights of these organizations to lure their customer, because regulation has not told them what they should not do, because this is not something that probably has been anticipated by regulation.
Yeah.
But I presume that it will catch their attention and they would definitely restore sanity in this area, because I don't think that you should lure a person to trade.
Yeah.
And that too with freebies.
Yeah.
So it gives the investor a false sense that he is being treated specially.
Yes.
And it also gives him a misplaced belief that his risk taking is also free. The risk taking is not free. He is going to pay for his risk taking.
Correct.
especially if somebody encourages him to transact more. This is my experience.
Yeah.
And if as an investor, I need to earn more returns, I actually need to transact far less.
Correct.
That is my experience. And that is my observation also of peers over the years. So if somebody is saying that I will give you more incentives to trade more, or I'll give you things so that you are part of my ecosystem, that lure is a price which is going to be paid by the investor sooner than later.
Okay.
And I think that it is also better to regulatorily protect him.
Speaking of luring investors in, we see a lot of first-time investors also entering into direct equities and starting to trade on their own without any advice. Do you think regulatory, is it possible, or has it been happening anywhere in the Western countries whereby depending upon the portfolio size or depending upon the age of an investor, they are barred from doing certain kinds of trade or certain kinds of risky investments? You first come up to a certain level, for instance, and then you can do options trading, or then you can, or maybe your portfolio is, your basic mutual funds portfolio is filled with rock solid basic schemes before you take on sectoral funds or thematic funds. Of course, mutual funds is a different ballgame altogether. We're talking about direct equities in this. But looking at the incident at what happened in the US, whereby a 20-year-old young fellow, he committed suicide, and because he thought that he was making losses in options trading, whereby it was later revealed that it was not, in fact, the loss that he had incurred. He thought that he had incurred a loss, and he actually took his own life. It was a very sad event. But clearly, is it time for the regulators to step in and bar first-time investors to be trading in risky investments? Can we in fact do that?
There was a proposal about who should be allowed to participate in the F&O. I mean, it came from the regulatory side, but I don't think much movement has happened thereafter. But okay. I believe that the freedom to choose is something which we should provide to the investor.
Okay.
What we need is education about how he should exercise that freedom. Okay. I don't believe in saying that you should not come here, and it becomes some kind of exclusivist in structure. I don't think the market should be like that. I believe market should be democratic, and we should educate people, and we should encourage them to do what is suiting their risk profile.
Okay.
Probably I would encourage regulators to insist that client should take a risk profile independently through some other agency, like a rating agency, and then that risk profile should be provided to their brokers.
Okay.
Right? And that should be a precondition to segments. Maybe somebody with a very low risk profile should not be allowed to, wander into the options trading, because he may be doing it without realizing that it is bad for him. Typical, as you mentioned, the case of that Robin Hood trader who took his life, he didn't realize whether he was making money or losing money itself.
Yeah.
So somebody who comes into this without realizing whether it suits him should be given a fair opportunity to understand what suits him and what doesn't suit him. So there should be a more intensive profiling which educates the client of what suits him. And probably if he still wants to do it, let him file a form saying that he knows this is not suiting him and yet he would like to do it. So at least create some steps in between so that people are born adequately.
Okay. But do you think any of these online brokerages have been indulging or have been communicating about the risk levels to investors either by way of newsletters or by way of enough warnings on the website or on the app?
See, I have read some communication which they have tried to do in public media. One of them did it about one company much after the event, saying that 80% so many people traded in Yes Bank and lost their money. That is, it's doubly painful if I'm a young investor who I traded on the same platform and I lost my money, and then the organization or its authorized people put out communication later saying that, so many people lost, we knew this all along. Somehow it doesn't cut much ice at me. I mean, it's not something that I, as a trader in the place of these young people who are traded, I would feel very bad. I mean, I would definitely hurt my morale. I would think that there could be a far more sensitive engagement with their younger investors and their clients. I think that is something that it's up to those companies to decide whether they would like to be more humane and more sensitive to their clients. And that is a call which I'm hoping will be taken sometime. Or at least there should be an institutional imperative that organizations do this.
Okay. So how should millennials invest in stock markets? Shyam, let's get down to that question which we've been wanting to ask you since we started this podcast. First-time investors, in their 20s, how should they invest in equity markets? Should they go direct equities at all, or should they just stick to mutual funds? How should they approach equities? What is required to be a good equity investor from a millennial? What would you advise them?
To be fair, I think that choice should be given to them. I was given the choice. I chose direct equity. So okay. I would not really tell a person that you should not do it or you should do only this. But one important point that I would bring up from my own experience and what I have seen is that the first 1 or 2 years should be in understanding how the equity market works. It should, a lot of time should be spent not on investing, but on learning.
Hmm. Okay, okay.
First 2 years, you should spend more time on learning and you should not worry about earning.
Okay.
And which means that you should restrict your choices to a few safe companies which you understand.
Hmm.
And then you slowly expand your sphere of interest and competence and then go into the riskier parts of the market. I believe that people are doing the reverse. I think they're going into the riskier parts of the market first.
Okay.
And that's where they think they want to cut their teeth. I do not advocate that approach. I stand firmly against that.
Okay.
An investor must define his investment universe. If I'm here to tell the story, despite starting as a equity investor at a time when the country was going through hell and you had liberalization and then you had the Harshad Mehta scam immediately after. The only reason I think I survived is because I had a very well-defined zone of competence out of which I did not go out. So I did not buy a single Harshad Mehta company.
Okay.
And I did not go into other areas where there was a lot of fraud, and I restricted myself to companies which I felt no matter what would come back in their business even if the market crashed. And that would save me. I don't see that approach here.
Okay.
What I see here is that people are going into the most actively traded or the most heavily traded options,
okay,
futures and smaller cap stocks in that order.
In that order. Okay.
Yeah. That is what I see happening.
Okay.
So the first choice is an option. The second choice is a future. The third choice is a stock which may not necessarily be illiquid, but is seeing a lot of volatility. If you compare that with what I did, it was the converse.
Did you start investing in small cap stocks right at the beginning of your career, or when you started investing around 1990s, you first chose large cap stocks, Tata companies or whatever, like the companies that have been around for decades, and then you started going to mid caps and small caps?
Yeah, initially, my earliest investments were in bonds, which is today part of Hindustan Lever. It was in ITC. It was one of the earliest stocks we bought. Dr. Reddy's, Ranbaxy, companies which even at that time had a reasonable reputation.
Okay.
Or we could trust to some extent. You know, there were the better companies, multinational companies in pharma.
Okay.
Many of the companies, my initial zone of competence was mostly MNCs and a few good Indian companies which I thought would grow. It was not the smaller companies, because smaller companies at that time were part of the vanishing tribe.
Okay. Approximately, what is the hold period that you, when you entered the markets, Shyam, how long you used to hold on to your stocks before you felt that, okay, I need to now sell or maybe add more or something?
The average holding period at the time was about 2 years.
Okay, even in that time? Even in that time?
Yes. Okay. Because you want to try. When you read and when you learn, you want to experiment. You want to apply what you learn.
Okay.
So that tendency is something which all people will have. I'm not surprised many of the young people have it today. But applying that should be more circumspect, because the times are much tougher today. The valuations are much higher.
Yeah.
And the scope to get hurt is more. That is what I believe.
That's true. And do you also recommend our young millennial friends to sort of read up on the company that they invest in and not just invest because they like the name or because they've read some tips that have come through SMS or WhatsApp or something, to actually open up balance sheets and read annual reports? How practical, I mean, how advisable is it for them to do these things?
Personally, my learning was very interesting. I was well clued into what was the cover of the market,
okay,
but I would never act on it. So I would go back and always go to the balance sheet and read and do all those things and then see how much reality is different from what you're hearing.
Okay.
Right? That gap is something that you need to learn to measure in your mind. You need to estimate it. And when you find that gap is more than what you can take, you must walk away from those investment decisions.
Okay.
70% of the time spent in understanding the companies, only 10 or 20% of the time and was spent in understanding the mood or mind of the market.
Okay.
I believe now today it's not so. I believe people don't read anything.
An information overload. No, you get so much of information on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and plus if that is not enough, then WhatsApp. There are stock market groups. You know, people exchange tips and ideas.
What people don't realize is whether it was through the media in those days, that is, there was an alternate media. I'm not accusing the mainstream media of doing it. But there were alternate magazines which used to do all these things. So they were peddling the names. Now in WhatsApp, the investors themselves are doing it.
Yeah.
You think that somebody is sharing knowledge on WhatsApp group, but he would actually be peddling his stock. And you don't know how to make the distinction. Because it is possible for people to do that. Many times I have seen, even on Twitter, people ask that, please name stocks. And the person who gives the names for the stock is actually guiding me better. That is not the way to do it. People should get the names from various sources. Okay, from reading, from magazines, from television, from wherever they get it. And then they should go and do their homework. Okay. And that should be a very intense exercise. Based on what they finally understand from that exercise, only then they should go towards investing. Today, that whole cycle is being cut short into so-and-so is giving his tips or names or portfolio, and therefore I'm going to just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
I believe that the most critical component of investment ideation is validation. That is being sidestepped by a lot of young people today, and I see it. In fact, I see it wherever I am publicly engaging. I am seeing that come very strongly.
Okay, thanks a lot, Shyam, for your valuable insights. I hope our young millennial friends would have learned a lot by what's the right way to invest in stock markets. Thank you so much for joining us today, Shyam.
Thank you, Behzad. It was my pleasure, and I wish all those who are listening to this podcast a great learning and evolution. I hope you all become fine investors. Thank you.
That's all we have for you today, folks. Hope you guys take some of Shyam's advice and don't dive into equity markets if you don't know what you're doing. Keep listening to Simply Safe Podcast. If you have any feedback, please write into us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. And for more news, views and updates, log on to www.moneycontrol.com.